Theodore Roosevelt, who was President of the United States in the opening years of the 20th century, was one of the most colorful figures ever to hold that high office. Perhaps Teddy Roosevelt's most permanent contribution to civilization arose out of a much publicized hunting trip when the flamboyant president announced to the world's press that he was determined to bag a grizzly bear. It should also be said in passing that one of his more childish Democrat opponents was quoted in the press as wishing the bears good hunting. At any rate, there came a day when Teddy Roosevelt found himself hurriedly looking down the sights of his rifle as a bear crashed noisily from the undergrowth. Before he squeezed the trigger, however, he realized that it was only a young bear cub. He let it go, and the story of Teddy's bear flashed around the world. And ever since then, thanks to the initiative of an American toy shop and toy manufacturer at the time, no family home is complete without a cuddly replica of that famous animal. Another of Teddy Roosevelt's claims to fame was the founding of the Ananias Club. Whenever he wished to accuse one of his political opponents of double dealing, he publicly nominated the man for membership of the Ananias Club. This custom of his sent many reporters back to their Bibles and in a way rescued Ananias from the dusty tomb of history and made him a living citizen of the modern age. Men who bark loudly of their devotion to peace while making murderous war, or who deplore the starvation of millions while doing nothing to prevent it from happening, the Ananias Club has enrolled a large membership. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's, like those newspaper reporters, go back to our Bibles and see just what it was that Ananias and his wife Sapphira did. Every family has its black sheep. That's the expression we use for the embarrassing relative that nobody talks about. And the church is no exception. Even within the small group of 12 handpicked, carefully chosen disciples, there was one black sheep, Judas Iscariot. And even in the first days of the church, when its life was fresh and pure, there were two black sheep, Ananias and Sapphira. There may have been more, we're not told, but we can be grateful to Luke, who was frank enough to release the story of these two. He could so easily have held back a story that might have discredited the church he loved. But he followed in the steps of his Old Testament predecessors and told all the facts, warts and all. What he says about the unfortunate couple could well be divided into four parts: what the couple did, what they did to themselves, what they did to the church, and what should the church do with them. So first, what the couple did. They sold a piece of property. They did it of their own free will. They contributed part of what they received to the church, and the rest, secretly, they held back. Now, there was no communistic compulsion on the part of the early church for people to pool the resources, but many wealthy Christians, of their own free will, sold their property for the benefit of their poorer fellow Christians. Barnabas stands out as a shining example of this kind of sacrificial free will offering. The crime of Ananias and Sapphira was clearly not that they refused to cooperate in the system of voluntary sharing, but that they ostentatiously claimed to have made a great sacrifice, and in fact secretly retained some of the proceeds of the sale of their property. Even to have kept some proportion of the money openly while gifting the rest would have been a generous deed. Their sin was the hypocrisy of having claimed to give their all. They wanted to be admired for their generosity, but they were cynical, calculating frauds. People have always been tempted to live behind deceptive facades. They have thought that so long as the front windows were clean, it didn't matter much about the back ones. Back in 1900, the Glasgow industrialist and Christian philanthropist, Lord Overton, fought a successful campaign on Glasgow Corporation to stop the city's trams from running on a Sunday. In 1901, the following year, the Labour leader, Keir Hardie, revealed that in the Sheffield Chemical Works, owned by Lord Overton, the workers had their Monday wages stopped if they didn't work on a Sunday. And moreover, wages and working conditions were scandalous. In the eyes of Jesus, the sin that is most loathsome of all is trying to impress people by pretending to be something that you are not. And secondly, there's what the couple did to themselves. Their sin was the death of them. Luke does not linger in sentimental sympathy over the end of these people. They both drop dead. Do you remember Billy Bones, the retired pirate in Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island? He'd made off with the map that showed where Captain Flint's ill-gotten gains were buried. Then Billy Bones lived peaceably enough in the inn owned by Jim Hawkins' mother until his old shipmates caught up with him and delivered to him the black spot. He died of an apoplectic fit as soon as he realized that he'd been found out. Guilt is a powerful emotion. According to some medical science reports, a proportion of arthritis and some forms of cancer are due to repressed guilt, which locks our joints and destroys our blood chemistry, which is an interesting possibility. The sense of their own guilt coming upon them with the force of a shock that was fatal is enough to explain the sudden end of both Ananias and Sapphira. It seems to the modern reader like a cruel fate. It seems to deny the mercy of God and to violate the spirit of loving kindness which Jesus himself displayed. We tend nowadays to forget that God's character is like a coin with two sides, justice and love. To those who know him, he is a loving father. To those who do not, he is a righteous judge. I wonder if you remember that scene in towards the end of C.S. Lewis's The Last Battle, the final book in the Narnia series, where Aslan, who in the story represents Christ, is standing at a door that leads into the new Narnia, as the old Narnia is falling in destruction. And all the hordes of people who come up to that doorway either look upon Aslan and love him and walk in through the door, or else they turn away from him in fear into the darkness and are never seen again. We tend to rejoice in the blessed state of the sheep and to forget the fate of the goats. There are some things that you cannot do and live. There are penalties to be paid. Whatever exactly was the medical explanation for the sudden demise of Ananias and Sapphira, it's fair to say that they brought it upon themselves. Yet even for one who has committed worse crimes than theirs, there is the offer of forgiveness, which may be accepted or rejected by us. These words of St. Augustine give food for thought. Do not despair. One of the thieves was saved. Do not presume. One of the thieves was damned. So first, there was what Ananias and Sapphira did. And second, there was what they did to themselves. And thirdly, there is what they did to the church. Luke doesn't tell us what harm this couple did to the church, but they certainly can't have done any good. One of the most impressive things about this small group of the early church was the spirit that existed among the members. They were interested in each other. They were loyal to each other. They took care of one another. See how they love one another, said people. and were moved to join them.